The Warriors have won the NBA Finals. We'll talk about how they did it, what it means for their dynasty, and what it means for Steph Curry's legacy. Plus, why these Celtics might struggle to get this far again. All of that and more on today's Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily podcast on the NBA. However you may be tuning in on YouTube, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts, thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. I'm Wes Goldberg here with Adam Mattes. Four of the last eight championships, but also won the finals after missing the playoffs 2 years in a row. Steph Curry called it rock bottom, what this team has gone through since 2019, through the injuries, reshaping the roster post-Kevin Durant. But they get back to the finals, and their championship experience shows through. And holy cannoli, Adam, the Warriors outlast the Celtics 103-90. They win the finals in six games. It's a story, I think, of both sustained excellence and also a remarkable comeback, considering where this team had been. Now the Warriors dynasty is up to four championships. Steph Curry is up to four rings. I want to talk about Steph and his legacy here in a minute, but what to you stands out about this Warriors championship versus some of the other runs?
I mean, this is one of the best stories, in my opinion, and I'm not a Warriors person. I have no affiliation to the Warriors. This is not like I'm not like a Steph stan or fan or anything like that. I'm just saying this as a person who genuinely loves the way that they play the game and loves the way that the organization is run, love the way that they coach, the assemble team, every single aspect of the Warriors organization. And it's just such a success story. For them to basically win in the third iteration of themselves, you know, you got the same core, but you've got Harrison Barnes, then you get to Kevin Durant, then you, and even guys like me would sit back and say, I wonder how many the Warriors could have won if it weren't for KD, maybe he goes in there, but you watch him bounce back now with a third iteration and get such great contributions from guys like Andrew Wiggins, Gary Payton, Kevon Looney. It's not a coincidence. It's not just on the shoulders and greatness of Steph and Draymond, who are absolutely incredible. There's a culture there. There is a system in place. There is just a development that starts from that stretches from the top of the organization and ownership all the way to the bottom of the owner of the organization. And to me, it's just such a great story about what I think basketball is supposed to be.
And you know, listening to the players afterwards during the trophy ceremony, they all said to a man, this means more. Bob Myers, Steve Kerr, every player, they all said it. And maybe some of that is just because it's the most recent one and they just won it. And I could understand emotionally, but also it makes sense. Like, this, I think, does mean more than the other ones, right? I mean, maybe not more than the 2015 championship. Sort of depends on what you think about that Cavs team, not having Kyrie, not having Kevin Love. But, this matters so much for all of their legacies because of the Kevin Durant cheat code championships. Like, those were just so, there was just the overwhelming favorites, and nobody really knew what to make of it, of those teams, because we've never seen anything like that, quite like that before. And, you know, there were so many questions about this team. And I didn't know if the dynasty was over, Adam. Like, I really didn't. Like, this is a team, it's so easy to forget that they didn't make the playoffs for 2 years. Yeah. They had the worst record in the league 2 years ago. Right. And, you know, maybe it's because I was just so close to it covering them those 2 years, but it was really bad. Like, that was really bad basketball. And to think that that team is this team now, I don't think if this team gets to the second round and loses to Memphis, hypothetically, like, that you could still call it a dynasty. I don't know that if you go to the Western Conference Finals and lose in the conference finals, that you could still call it a dynasty. Like, this was legacy defining on so many counts, not just for the Warriors organization, but for Steph, obviously, for Clay, for Draymond, like all these guys.
Absolutely great. And I mean, I'm right there with you. And what I think is so neat about it, the NBA, especially over the last 10 years, maybe last 5 years in particular, it's become so different. There's so much talent. There's so many different ways to win. There's so many different styles that you really do see great teams fall because they got the wrong matchup. And I think now, as much as really in any time over the last 25, 30 years, the ability to be malleable on both ends of the court is so important. But what's interesting about the Warriors is they're so malleable. They're malleable on both ends of the court, especially defensively. You swap in a guy in this series like Gary Payton, who has an enormous impact, has the ability to guard Tatum when he needs to. Andrew Wiggins does a great job on Tatum. Just what they were able to do there, very malleable. But offensively, what's interesting to me is the Warriors system is now 10 years strong. 10 years been running this. and teams have adjusted. They switched defense. Like, the game has been revolutionized in large part trying to answer the Warriors' question, and here we are with a new cast of supporting characters, and you still can't stop Steph Curry. You still can't stop Draymond Green. He doesn't even score. He doesn't even score, and it's still, you still can't stop the system. They just, it's so impressive because the league finds a way to stop everything. Here we are 10 years strong. You can't stop it.
Draymond scores so little that the moment he makes one like kind of mid-range jumper, it feels like he's just broken the other team. The other team's like, oh my God, now he's making it because he never makes us. And now, like, you combine all that. The system is so strong. And then you add, like, the confidence in that system that this team – and look, I thought that confidence honestly bordered on cockiness. Like, this is a team that also got blown out in the playoffs. You know, like, it kind of felt like they were getting too cute sometimes. They struggled with turnovers a lot. And yet that confidence showed through. And I forget who said it, but I thought it was such a good point. Like, what stands out to me about this team – they were down 2-1. Like, there was moments where the Celtics just looked outright like the more talented team in this series, and it felt like they had more answers than questions, and that the Warriors, like, it wasn't long ago that Steve Kerr was like, hey, we're plugging holes here.
Right.
But somebody said it was a great point. They just, it's the competitive endurance that they have, just that will to keep fighting and to keep sticking to their game plan. And they didn't just like stick to their game plan. They doubled down on the small ball, starting Otto Porter, putting Draymond at the five to start games. They went back more to the motion heavy stuff and actually veered a little bit more away from all that pick and roll heavy stuff that was there for the first three or four games of the series. So they doubled down on all of that. And they just, they were able to just execute on every single possession way more than Boston was. And the Celtics just sort of unravel at the end.
Yeah.
22 turnovers in this game. Jason Tatum can't get it going. He was still look gassed. They were complaining to the officials the entire night, it seemed like. And they unraveled while the Warriors didn't. They doubled down and they were sturdy. And that's the championship DNA that people talk about.
Well, what you're referencing here, I think it was J.J. Redick on his podcast that said mental stamina, I think is what he called it. Like, it wasn't the physical stamina. Like, to go four rounds, there's a mental stamina you have to have. And I think that's what you're referencing because
– yes.
And you mentioned losing by 40 or 50 points, whatever it was they lost to the Memphis. What is Draymond Green and Steph Curry doing on the sideline at the end of that game? They're dancing. They're kind of like – and it's one of these – of it's not, I think some people might look at that and say it arrogance, and there's probably a little arrogance, like well-earned arrogance that was part of that. But I think more than anything, it was an understanding that to win four rounds, to go that deep into the playoffs and actually win, you can never get too high, never get too low. Even in the toughest times, you have to know who you are and have confidence. And when you're down 50, a lot of teams will look at that and question themselves. And do we need to make changes? Do we know who we are? Is this a crack in what we are? It's starting to show. And I think the Warriors are just like, man, we know exactly what it is. This is a marathon. We're on mile, 18 of a marathon. We're going to be fine. And you saw that in the series. I honestly believe that when things started to fray a little bit for Boston and, they go up in the series and then they gets tied, then you have the pivotal game five. I just think you saw a little bit of that. Not, I don't want to say panic, but just losing control of the confidence and sort of that perspective that the Warriors never lose.
They went like Boston goes up double digits early in the game. They come out with that energy that everybody expected them to have in Boston, right? And the Warriors, like you said, they never panic. They go on this huge 21-0 run, bridging the first and second quarter. They take a double digit lead, and then the opposite happens for the Celtics, where the Warriors never worried when they were down double digits. It just sort of felt like the Celtics broke in half and they just didn't really know what to do with it. And they freaked out and they panicked and they could never really get back to their game plan. And you could feel it. Like, you could feel it happening. Also want to give a shout out to Steve Kerr. I actually thought he was outcoached for the first probably three games of the series by Ime Udoka. And I thought Steve Kerr was awesome. I thought it was his best coaching job of his career, quite frankly, by the end of this thing. Like, It takes a lot of nerve to switch up your starting lineup and to go away from stuff and to tinker the way that he tinkered with some pretty major adjustments, I thought. And that's not easy to do. And that's another part of that confidence. Hey, we've been here. We know what it takes. We're not afraid to make these kinds of major adjustments on this stage, where it felt like the Celtics didn't really know what kind of major adjustments that they wanted to make, if any adjustments, really. But
Forget just the starting lineup there for Steve Kerr. I mean, he closed a lot of these games with Gary Payton on the court, which I know is not a lineup. I'm not sure it's a lineup that they'd actually seen more than maybe 50 minutes of prior to the finals, in large part because you didn't have that lineup together until the playoffs. And then Gary Payton gets hurt in the second round. So they just didn't have a lot of that. But, you know, and credit to him, when you've won with Klay Thompson in a specific role and you've had some of these different Kevon Looney all year in a certain role, to be able to look at that and say, these guys are playing well, it's nothing that they're doing wrong, but this is our best bet. And it, by the way, Gary Payton, the last guy added to the roster, the 15th guy, he's going to close a pivotal game in the finals and then do it again and again. To be able to make calls like that, is it really is impressive. But again, I don't – sometimes we credit a coach and say, hey, they did a great job coaching or they failed to do this. Steve Kerr has the ability to do that in large part because who is part of that team? Draymond Green was benched in a pivotal game, by the way. Let's not forget this. Draymond Green himself was benched in the closing quarter of a very pivotal game. But you only can do that if you have a culture that can handle that type of strain and players in there that say, no, it's we, not me. And everybody buys in.
And a front office and an ownership that buys into you as a coach, where you know that you have the job security that if you do something like that, that you're not going to get fired. Right. And so that's huge. Of all the championships, it reminds me the most of the 2015 one, only because it was the one we least saw coming. And now you look to kind of spin it forward, like, yeah, obviously Steph, Klay, Draymond, Steve Kerr, they've all been here. But now you got guys like Andrew Wiggins and Jordan Poole now having that championship experience. They've done it. They've won it. They're going to come back next year with a swagger. It would not shock me if the Warriors came out just like they did after the 25th. Maybe not win 73 games, but come out and dominate and really, you know, be one of the top teams during the regular season, because they weren't. And there was a lot, you know, they had injuries, 11 minutes in the regular season with the big three. We all know that story. But like, this is a team that looks primed, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, man, because like, you look at both of these teams, there's like young players on both sides, and you look at this and think there's really an opportunity to be as good or better. I mean, Steph, you can make an argument for Golden State side. Like, you can make an argument that Steph is a better isolation player than he's ever been. I honestly think.
Yes, of course. Yep.
I mean, there's areas where maybe he's slowed down and we've seen him be just even hotter from the 3-point line, even in playoff rounds. Like, we've seen that. But as far as now, what happens when he gets on an island, famously gets shut down by Kevin Love on one play, and it becomes like this thing. He's the best ISO, one of the best ISO scorers in the NBA right now because of where he picks his spots and how he takes advantage of it. So, to me, you know, he only looks good. Draymond Green's the one guy that I think you look at and you think, okay, maybe there's a clock there. But Jonathan Kuminga coming up, Moses Moody coming up. You just got – that's a team that has this whole other layer behind them.
People argued about the two-timeline approach. Do you have to trade Kuminga, Moody, and Wiseman to try to get something? They were right. You know,
they threaded narrow needle, like the smallest little area. They somehow threaded it.
But no matter what happens now, you've won one championship post Durant with these young guys. Like, you were right. No matter what happens again, you don't even have to win another one. No matter what happens now, you were right. They're going to be competitive no matter what for the next several years. Like, now you've got the rest of the NBA chasing you again. And that's sort of the area that the Warriors have occupied for the last decade. But we will talk about Steph Curry next and his legacy and why it's okay to just admit, hey, winning a finals MVP does matter for the resume. What does that mean for Steph's legacy? We'll talk about that next. But first, betonline.net is your number one source for all of your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, news, and odds, including this year's basketball championship matchup, the NHL finals, Major League Baseball, and of course, all of the latest fighting news from MMA and UFC to boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sport wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. It's BetOnline, where the game starts. Okay, we have an important favor to ask you before we move on. We've put together a survey so we can learn more about listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcasts even better. This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and don't like about Locked On Podcasts. Go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take long, and everybody that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. All you got to do is take the survey. So to take that audience survey, go to lockedonpodcast.com/survey. Thanks for your help. Now the Warriors have won 4 of the last 8 championships. Steph has 4 rings. He's 4-2 now in the finals. And he finally has that finals MVP. Perhaps outside of losing a 3-1 series lead in 2016, his resume is without blemish, I think, at this point. Can we have that conversation about where Steph ranks all time, where he ranks among the greatest point guards ever? Like, how do you think this impacts Steph's legacy?
Well, you know me. We do power rankings on the show usually on Fridays because of how dumb I think it is to rank things. I always say that ranking play, so it's like a parody.
Right.
Ranking players to me is like ranking ingredients. It just doesn't make sense to say what's better, mozzarella cheese or watermelon. Like they're used for different dishes, different things.
Yeah, mozzarella cheese though.
But just so we're clear, okay.
Yeah.
But no, what I think is Steph is an all-time great legacy or like a rankings breaker, because I understand when people say like a Kobe is better, you know, he can do more things, he's more versatile, like this or that. I understand when people say that. What I think is when we talk about what impact does a player have, how hard is it to build around them, how well does what they do lend itself to winning? And I just think we look at it now and we think, this is a culture that has somehow sustained itself for 10 years. It's crazy in today's NBA for a culture to sustain itself for 3 years, let alone 10. Yeah. You go through these different iterations, you bring different personalities in, different challenges. The spotlight has been on them. They have been the marquee team over the last 10 years. So like, it's not that they've flown under the radar a la San Antonio Spurs, not taking anything away from them, but it's a different level when you're on the front, you're on SportsCenter all, you know, every single day, everything that you do. And yet somehow it's held together with him and the on-style play. He's the only player I've watched that to this extent doesn't even have to have a good game to make the biggest impact.
Right.
He just has to be on the court. And so for me, now the proof is in the pudding. 4 championships. He got the final MVP. He's got the 2 MVPs. I don't care for like ranking him above or below this guy. All I know is when you talk about the all-time greats, there's only a small handful of players that I think had the bigger impact on their team than him. It's a very, very short list.
I think he's, without argument, I'm with you. I don't want to get into whether or not he's the second greatest point guard ever, if he's the third greatest guard of all time, like that,
I just
whatever.
Don't think it makes sense. But I honestly don't think it makes sense to compare him to Magic Johnson.
I don't know
what that means.
Yeah, it makes more sense almost to compare Draymond to Magic Johnson. Like they play more similarly. But he's top, whatever. Is he top 10 for you? Okay, that means he's above Shaq and Kobe and maybe Tim Duncan and some of these other guys. All right, if you want to make that argument, make that argument. But he's without a doubt top 12, 15, somewhere in that realm. And that's like what you said, one of the all-time greats. It's so hard to put to kind of measure what it is that he does. But you just look at the track record here and the success that he's had. Like, I mean, even like forget the all-time greats, like compare, like, is he the best player in the league? Like, I don't know. Like, where does he rank? Like, I just don't even know how to put him. You know, it's really
difficult. On-off numbers are absurd too. Like, that's a team full of great players. But even in this playoffs, not just in the finals, but throughout it, you would have lineups that featured Draymond and Wiggins and Steph and Poole, and Clay and Poole, and they would be getting beat or they would be breaking even. Is one guy. You took one guy off to give him a rest and it would change. But to me, the more interesting question, Wes, rather than do the like rankings, because I just think it's an impossible thing. Maybe it's good podcasting and I'm punting on this. But to me, if we talk about what players have been the most rewarding to root for a specific city, I honestly think if you go across sports, forget just basketball, I think there's only three, maybe four players all time. Michael Jordan, the city of Chicago. You were with Chicago. Okay. You got 6 to win to end it. He gave you great highlights. He gave you great personality. It was a joy from start to finish. Tom Brady, 18 years.
Oh, you had Boston. To bring up Tom Brady.
You get 6 championships. You're in the Super Bowl. You're always good, whatever.
Jeter.
Those are the only two guys that I think are definitively ahead of the Steph Curry Golden State experience. Okay. Where Steph gives you 4 titles and counting, or you know, more to go. He gives you an all-time great season. He gives you a beautiful style of basketball.
Yeah.
This wasn't just that they won in this boring way. He revolutionizes the game.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, for something about his game, unlike Brady, unlike LeBron, he was doubted the whole way. So you get this, you somehow get to be a dynasty that was also underrated the entire time, which is like the best, the sweet spot of sports.
I don't know if that they were underrated during the Kevin Durant years.
Steph was,
and that's, I think the finals MVP is a really big deal. Like him being the best player on the floor in a championship, like whether the hardware to me isn't as important as the fact that, you know, people did think that he was just sort of okay in the finals runs. Right. I think that was a little overstated, but you look at his numbers, man, like this is an all timer. This is what he averaged in these finals, 31 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. He shot 48.2% overall, 43.7% from three-point range. Call it whatever you want, vintage Steph, peak Steph. Like, I don't know. I just know that this Steph Curry is still in his prime. I truly believe that. I'm with you. I think he's better in isolation. He's stronger. He's probably not the same three-point shooter, but he's like, I mean, he's still freaking amazing. And
I think he's calmer than ever.
He's calmer. And you know what? That's a real thing. And the teammates that were around him for these last few years and stuff, like, all of them, everybody who comes through and plays even a little bit, even the two-way guys to a T would always say, you know, yeah, you talk to them off to the side and they're like, yeah, Steph is the real deal. And there is just a reverence for him that is look, I never covered Tim Duncan in person, but people have made that comparison. Right. And it seems like an apt one to me because he has a calming presence over that whole organization because he's not like a rah-rah guy by any means, but he's very much like, it's all cliche, but it's very true. First one in, last one out, hardest working, lead by example, all this stuff. And his greatness precedes all of that. And it just gives people so much confidence that, okay, this guy is going to see us through no matter what. Yeah. And that's what and then they're down to one of these finals and he just goes crazy and has this amazing final series, wins finals MVP, and now they're champions again.
And the Duncan's on that list, by the way, too. And I know some people may be listening to this thinking, you know, oh, what about, you know, LeBron, this or that. But LeBron, I'm talking about a city. Like, I'm not talking if you were a LeBron fan. Right. I'm talking if you were a Cleveland Cavaliers fan or what have you. And there were some great moments. Don't get me wrong there. I just think that the Steph Curry Golden State experience has been an all-timer, right up there with the Kobe Lakers or Magic Lakers experience and some of these other long-time, you know, one-offs. I just don't know that. I think if you ask somebody, like, If you could give someone truth serum and say, would you take four championships and a 10-year dynasty and all this fun, would you take that or would you take, you know, Dirk Nowitzki's career? Or would you take this or that? So I think Steph is just up there, man. It's been I can't imagine being a Warriors fan. It must have been so great.
And knowing that they're just going to still be good. Yeah. You know, like this wasn't like the last gasp. Like this isn't the last dance. Like they're just going to still be good.
It might be. I mean, I don't want to make it.
It might be their last championship, but they're not going to be like not in the playoffs. You know what I mean? They're still going to be competitive. Right. The Steph Curry show continues.
Right. Right. Yep. That's crazy. Congrats to them. What a great story, man. And Andrew Wiggins. You talked about legacies for Draymond, who he kind of needed a good last two games and he brought it. I mean, he was really good in these last two, especially tonight. But Andrew Wiggins, to me, is there any player this year? He's on a short list of players who has raised their reputation. I mean, he was thought of one way, obviously, coming into the Warriors. He was thought of one way coming into even the playoffs. And for him to be as pivotal as he was in this, like, he's a champion, but he's a championship caliber player. You know, he's a championship caliber player, like, definitively full stop. And I just think that's such a shocker, but also it's just so cool to see.
He just sort of retroactively earned that All-Star that we all made jokes
it's
about.
So true.
All-Star appearance. Like, you're gonna look back on this 10 years from now and be like, oh, Andrew Wiggins All-Star 2022? That makes perfect sense. Like, why wouldn't
he get it right? Yeah.
Got it right, man. Got it right. All right, let's talk about a team that didn't quite get it right in the finals. Celtics. What happens next? Where do they go? Can they get back to this stage? We'll talk about that next here on Locked On NBA. All right, even though they lost, still an incredible turnaround by the Celtics. I know that it's hard to probably think about that if you're a Boston fan, but you think about where they were before January, what they've done since January, Adam. I mean, they went through a tough Eastern Conference slate. At times looked like they were the best team in these finals. Again, we're up in these finals. But Tatum looked gassed in the end. They were overwhelmed by Golden State. What do you make of the Celtics season? Where do they go from here?
Well, first of all, I am so annoyed by this idea that Jason Tatum was gassed and that's why he played bad. Like, it just bothers me because it sounds like it's this like, well, that's what happened. Come on, by no fault of his own, he was tired and therefore it was unfair in this way. Like, guess what? Winning a championship is really hard. Michael Jordan played through the flu. We call it like the greatest game of his career. He was very exhausted. He's carried off the court. To win a title, you have to be exhausted. Like, that's just what it takes. So was he a little bit more tired? Maybe. I mean, they did have a really tough road, you know, very tough path to getting where they got. But to me, that's like by no means this like, oh, well, that's an excuse or hey, that this context.
No, you're 24 years old. Like, you should be able to do this at this point in the prime. Yeah.
And by the way, he did it. I don't like, this is also not a Jason Tatum doesn't have this or that. What I really mean to say is that no, the Warriors exhausted him. He was tired and they made it almost impossible for him to play well. And then of course he didn't overcome that. So that to me, that's the story. But where does Boston go from here? It's interesting because this felt to me like a year of transition. You know, you're going away from Stevens. You got a new coach. Jason Tatum, I think this was in a lot of ways a breakout season, becomes an MVP candidate. It just felt like a little bit of a turnover year. And then they get hot and it really all comes together for them. I saw somebody after game one said, is this the 1991 finals? Basically referencing, are we seeing the new face of the NBA emerge, Jason Tatum, and this young team getting over the hump when we didn't expect it? And here goes a long run. I think that might be a year premature. I still think this is a really good team. I think they're going to have a lot of great players back. I don't think they're quite great enough to say they're a next dynasty.
Yeah.
And I think that this was, in hindsight, probably a year that a young team ran up against an older team, more experienced team, and probably, and hopefully for their sake, learned some very tough lessons.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of what's next, I think it's pretty clear. You know, this Warriors series showed them, you know, the holes in their roster. And it was a really good team. And I'll still hear the argument that they're their more talented team, like just in sheer talent. Like, I'll hear that argument. I don't have anything to disagree with that. But like with Tatum, like, yeah, you know, it not just did the Warriors outlast you, and did Steph Curry, who's the best conditioned athlete probably in the NBA, outlast you, even in his age. But like Jimmy Butler just did it in the last series too, and almost took you down just with sheer,
very close, very close.
Yeah, with sheer effort and not, and playing through that being tired. And you know, Tatum has to probably tap into whatever that is that he needs to tap into. And yeah, you know, people have speculated, is he dealing with something with the shoulder? Whatever. Everybody's hurt at this time.
Again, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You didn't win the finals, and you had a chance. For Jaylen Brown, like, he probably needs to learn to dribble a little bit better. Like, there's things that they could do on this roster, but.
Let me say one thing, though, about Tatum, though.
Sure.
I want to interject. And that is that there's actually basketball stuff that I think we saw as a whole in his game. And Tatum is one of these guys who has incredible footwork, body control, beautiful moves. Sometimes that beauty, like, has to go out the window. And I think he's one of those guys. Like, the Warriors did a great job of sort of luring him into the things that were pretty but not effective in this series, and some of those were him going to the, you know, dribbling to the basket too much. He should have probably gone to that 7-footer, which I know is not one of the shots he really goes to, because again, those aren't the shots you practice a ton of. You're practicing the fall away, the 15-footer, the shimmy shake. So I think some of this had to do with they put him into the spot that he did not want to go, and it shows you that, hey, sometimes you have to win with the ugly stuff.
Yes. Yeah. And he didn't dunk at all, right? The whole series. Like, that was one of those stats that were going around. Couldn't finish at the rim. That's a good point. You know, you just kind of just take, you got to just do it sometimes. And it's a really hard level to get to. And it shows that Tatum's got a little bit more. And again, like you said, this was supposed to be a transition year for the Celtics. New coach, kind of reshaped roster a little bit, all this stuff. And they got this far. If somebody wants to mention the 1991 finals, like, sure. I kind of was thinking about the 2012 Thunder when I was watching these Celtics. It, like, nice young team, all the talent in the world, lost to the more veteran team. And do you take it for granted getting this far? Do they make it back to the finals? I think it's going to be really tough. I mean, the Eastern Conference, I think, is only going to get better. Like, Milwaukee will presumably be healthy. They'll have Chris Middleton for another run, like, as long as he doesn't get hurt again. They're really good. And who knows what happens with Brooklyn, with Philly. Like, I think the East has a lot of really good teams. Like, it's not going to be easy to get through it again, you know? And so I don't think that if you're a Celtics fan, as young as this team is, like, you could take it for granted that you're just going to be here again.
Yeah. I think in today's NBA, so what is this? I believe this is the first time, maybe in NBA history, or maybe dating back to the 60s, that four different teams have won it in four separate years. Is that right? You go from Toronto to the Lakers to Milwaukee to now Golden State. Like, that almost never happens. We almost always get repeats. And I wonder, like, when we talk about since 1970 or whatever, we're really talking about the modern era of basketball. We've seen some kind of dynasty. I know we just called the Warriors a dynasty, but some kind of either back-to-back or 2-3 or something of that nature. The fact that we haven't had that now 4 years in a row might be more a sign of where we are. The league just being so deep, so much talent, it distributed amongst so many teams that I kind of wonder, like, so when you say Boston, you know, they'll be back, this might be a little bit more, I'm not fully like the NFL, but a little bit more like the NFL, where, hey, just because you made it in your first or second or third year doesn't mean you're going to be back ever. You could be a great team for the next 10 years and not make it back.
Yeah. Dan Marino made the Super Bowl his second year, never made it back, you know, as long as we're making football comparisons on this show.
Yeah.
That hurt me personally for some reason. any final thoughts on the Warriors or the Celtics before we wrap it up here?
It was a great, it's just the NBA season. The last couple of years have been defined by COVID. They've been defined by injuries, shortened seasons, this or that. This is the last of that era. You know, this, even though this season kind of ended on time, like they, it got back, it was off on the heels of a short off season. So it felt condensed.
Yeah.
You know, now you get a full off season and you come back. I am curious to see, this was a great season. None of the championships, you take anything away. But I am kind of curious to see how that affects, especially some of the older teams, the Lakers and LeBron James, you know, the Clippers and Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I just, it feels like these last few years are almost a trilogy in some ways, starting with the bubble and ending with this one. And next year kind of marks a return to normalcy that I'm excited for.
It was a great season. I think you made a really good point. There's so much talent. I don't know who the best team in the league is next year, but the Warriors are the defending champs. Congrats to them. Congrats to Warriors fans. And all of that. This was fun, Adam. That's it.
This was a lot of fun, man. Great season. Now the Nuggets dynasty begins.
And silly season begins. We'll be here with free agency, the draft, all sorts of things here on the Locked On NBA channel. But that is it for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts for 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day. In the meantime, you can find me over at Locked On Heat and Adam over on Locked On Nuggets. Thank you for making Locked On NBA your first listen every day. The first picks of the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft have been made. Search now for the Ultimate NBA Mock Draft podcast and get over 50 insiders, the Odyssey Sports experts, the draft experts of Locked On NBA Big Board. The 5-episode Ultimate NBA Mock Draft is underway. Make Ultimate NBA Mock Draft your second listen today.